Well, it sounds like none of the, there were never issues. I mean, real issues.
What do you say, real issues? Around what?
In terms of program or disagreements about, it was more how much attention or control people had or wanted.
The issues were political issues, Sean, because we stayed in Capitol Hill all the time. We had to do a lot of research on it. We also had two bills of our own. We had $5,500 for Family Four that was introduced by Eugene McCarthy.
Oh, what I meant was issues when there were criticisms. That those criticisms were never disagreements around issues.
No, I don't think so.
Now, was there criticism that so much focus of the Nationals was on the legislative process?
We spent a lot of time on legislative process. A lot of time on process. And a lot of the staff time was put into that. Because the bills are tricky, and you have to be able, somebody has to be able to interpret the bills in layman language.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time around the 5,500. That was done by Eugene McCarthy in 1971. George McGovern done one, 6,500. So it took a lot of time, and we were trying to push that to people, but you know, people had attitude for that thing. Then we had the hunger issue, where the senator that died, who was his name? Bill Hart? Or did he die or his wife died? He died.
Oh, Burton? No, Burton.
No, not Burton. He was from, what was his name? His name was Phil. Phil, somebody. But we were doing we did a thing on what you call hunger. Where are they? Who's the police looking for out here?
There's a helicopter going overhead.
Oh. Oh, excuse me. I think his name was Phil. God, what was his name? Anyway, I think he passed away from cancer. But anyway, his family, we had some families that tried to live on what was proposed.
Those
things. We had things like that. I don't think we got too nationally. I don't think we got too involved into the educational thing, not in the school. That we got too involved around the health issues, because we had the health program that we got out of HW. And Gary Hart, you want to cut it off?
No, thanks.
It's gone. It's all gone.
Well, Johnny, it sounds like, well, there were two things, I guess. You were spending, even before you became associate director, more and more time in Washington, it sounds like.
I did. That's what
I'm all about. Would you go back and forth or spend long stretches at a time?
I used to maybe spend 1 week at home out of a month, about 3 or 4 years.
And were your kids still taking care of themselves? And would you spend most of that in Washington or out in the field helping to organize?
Most in Washington. A lot of people would call me. A lot of groups would call me. I remember going to Virginia once to, they had a conflict between some women in the group about a man. And would you believe they called me to come to Roanoke, Virginia to try and straighten it out? because it was about to, it was being detrimental to the organization. And I went. And I found myself sitting here with some people that I really don't know and talking about that kind of issue. But evidently it helped. Because the group was not destroyed, but it was about to be destroyed. So wherever I was needed, I went. I was down in New Mexico when they marched on Caesar Palace Hotel in Las Vegas. I was in New Mexico. I was down in Arizona a couple of times. Phoenix and Tucson. I organized a group in my hometown back in Little Rock, and was a very strong group there. I was in Atlanta, down in New Orleans, was down in Baton Rouge.
Now, would you go and organize groups?
Usually the groups would call me to talk to them about them. And that's what I done. Sometimes the organizers would say, well, a lot of people couldn't get to Washington or couldn't get to the meetings the way they was held. So they would want to know me. And so they made arrangements. Arrangements were made for me to go and sit down and visit with them and talk to them. South Carolina, the same way. So I guess I've been in, I think we counted it up, I've been in all of the states, including Hawaii and Alaska, except Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota, and Idaho.
Now, when you were doing it, I mean, it sounds almost like you taken, even before you were named associate director, that's what you were doing.
That was part of my responsibility as chairwoman. I guess that's what people wanted me to do, and that's what they elected me in. So when they said come to Detroit, I went to Detroit once, and I didn't know they were sitting up in there with guns. And I'm sitting between the groups. They were at a big confrontation with each other. They paid my way to come to see what I could do. That's the toughest one. I had some money and a white organizer. I had two groups that I could not deal with. There was the Washington, D.C. group when they split in the Detroit. That was the toughest. They were the toughest.
And what was the issue?
And I lost. I really felt like I didn't do a very good job trying to pull them together.
And what was the split over?
Our power playing, I guess. You got to understand, you might not understand, but poor people like power like anybody else, you know. And somebody wanted to be the chairman, and somebody else wanted to be the chairman, and you have attitude that, well, if I can't be it, I'm going to take, you know. So I remember in the church in Washington, D.C., part of the group was sitting over here, part of the group was sitting here. And I suggested, why don't you guys pull this thing together? And they sit there. I don't know what you're talking about. And I kept on until a group of ladies did get up and take the benches and push them over together. But after that, the group really didn't function well as it had before.
And was this an all recipient group?
The leadership, Etta was the first vice president. She lost in 1969
she really lost the view because Beulah became, she didn't become chairwoman, she became first vice chairwoman. And I think by Ella not being reelected, some of the people were kind of upset about that. Some didn't really care. I think they blamed me for her not being reelected for that. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to put that money on my back. That I couldn't handle that. It wasn't nothing to do about that. The Detroit thing was more or less, there was a woman in Detroit who had this this money, and she funded the group. And she was a middle class, evidently she had money, white woman. And they had hired a black woman as the director, and she was making a nice salary, and I think that was a part of their problem. I went to Detroit, and they got the group sitting here and the group sitting here, and tell me I didn't see it, and this group over here had guns, and I didn't know, and I'm sitting there in between them, trying to make some beef. They didn't show the guns, but I understood that they had them. You know, it was all right as long as they didn't show them, you know. So the group never really functioned as the group that they had done before. But they didn't stop. They still were, last time I heard them, they were still doing things on the statewide basis, and they were doing very well, yeah. So the ones that had some problem with it, I think they just dropped out, period, and quit. But they kept going. Mm-hmm. The part of the group kept going. Yeah.
Now what, so there were at least two occasions when, you know, there were guns involved.
Yeah, they was one, but they really never did it involve me. I would just sit there and go, see, I didn't understand. We didn't have any kind of, I didn't have to bother with that when I was home.
Yeah.
You know, but I also understand that when you're dealing with people, you have some problems. You just can't tell what way a human being is gonna go, what he or she is thinking. So I haven't had no basic training on how to deal with attitudes and things like that. I just, whatever I do, I guess it comes naturally, and just feel like that the problems are so great
out there.
You really don't need nothing among yourselves. That's the way I feel about it. And if you have to have it, you can holler and cuss and scream at each other, but when you come out with one accord. You know, those guys in Congress call each other all kinds of stuff, bitches, but when they get ready to flash up the pool and everything else, they come out like together. You see? So I feel like that's the way things should be done. Yeah, I think you have to have some discussion, and you have to talk about some things. And because if you don't, I tell them all the time, if you don't talk to me about something, I will become a dictator. And if you're going to let me be a dictator, you're in trouble. So you have to. There has to be some discussion. You don't have to agree with me on everything, and you don't have to disagree with me on everything either. That depends on how you feel about it. How I feel about it, I have disagreements with my husband, you know, but we come to a conclusion that something that we have to, just has to be done together. You know?
Were the Panthers involved in any of these groups?
No.
Or the Young Lords in the Chicago group?
Not to my knowledge. No. We had some support. I remember once when we went to jail, so we come out here, brought a bunch of men out to support us, out saying, free the sisters. The police say, you don't get away here. Well, free the sisters, all right, and put you in jail.
Was this in D.C.?
This was in D.C.
Oh, was this Capitol Day thing?
Yeah. We were on Capitol Hill. That was April 1968.
I want to go back to 68 and all the whole issue of the Poor People's Campaign, and even before that, but let me ask you, when you started being in the national office so much after, it sounds like after 60, between 69 and 71, or was it starting in 67?
No, it started in 67. I used to be in Washington maybe 3 or 4 days out of a week, and I had to go somewhere else.
So starting in 67, though?
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you then still receiving your AFDC checks here?
$333 a month.
And they didn't try and monkey around with them since you were...
Oh. We had, I had one incident. There was a lady, before I moved in this house, I used to live across the Imperial Highway. And, there was a busybody across the street. And see, I don't know no neighbors. I never have. You don't catch me in nobody's house with a cup, bar, no sugar. I don't need to go. I don't drink coffee anyway, so I don't need to go to nobody's house to do nothing. If I wasn't down to my little office, we wasn't doing talking about some organizing. I wasn't in the meeting. I was in my house. You know, and I had certain days I would do my washing and ironing for my kids and put like sign up all in the clothes and stuff like that. So this busybody saw me on television. She called the welfare department and say I had left my children at home by itself. Now, she was partially right, because Ronald Al was at home. But Ron and Al was teenagers, and they didn't want no baby today. My daughters was down in Pure Highway, down in my sister-in-law's house, where they always be. So, I look up one day, and here is the welfare director that was here on 23rd Street. And one of his assistants, Miss Stiver. So I couldn't imagine what they coming to my house for, so they came in, get out. Then I asked them what they wanted, because I had something to do. So she said, Jane, Melissa said, you know, they sent us out here, and she went on to ask, and she said, but you know better, right? That I ain't let no kids nobody tell us, right? She said, yeah, I know that, but to come down from headquarters. So that was Mr. Baker. He was sitting there. He asked me. I said, whoever told you that their kids was here by themselves, partially telling the truth. Ronald Al is here by themselves. Ronald Al do not want nobody coming in here taking care of them. Ronald Al take care of themselves. Cassidy and Joanne and Jocelyn is down on the street. Now, if you want to go down there and check it out, you can. She said, no, we don't want to check it out. She said, because I knew better in the first place. I said, I'm sure somebody out of my neighborhood had called. And KB but one person, because she and everybody's business, she don't know what's going on over here. So, I said, I don't want you to call no name. You know, that's just the way it is. So I never was bothered again. Once we had, Nixon had a conference on hunger, a big conference in Washington, D.C. A lot of people was there. And they sent the welfare commissioner, the chairman of the welfare commission for Los Angeles County, and a little man named Mr. Demdeck. And then they sent one person from Murphy's office at that time. Murphy was
George Murphy.
George, yes. Murphy was
forgot about him.
Ellis Murphy. Ellis Murphy.
Ellis Murphy was DPSS's director. They said Leonard Panitch.
He's retired now.
Represent them at this hunger conference. So we got to Washington. They got to Washington. They was at the same hotel that we was in. And everywhere I went, Mr. Panish, Mr. Bennett Dagg was right there with me. Everywhere, all over the place. So the girls from Philadelphia said, "Donna, who would these little white men following you around?" I said, "They from Welfare Department, Los Angeles." They said, "Welfare Department?" I said, "Yeah, Mr. Bennett Dagg is the Welfare Commissioner. Mr. Panish is one of the directors." They say, "Y'all got that kind of relationship." And I'm saying, I said, "Yes, we do." Had press conference, and Mr. Bennett is about, he's real short. The news reporter was trying to get his microphone hooked up. Mr. Bennett told him to give him the mic, and he held the mic for the conference. So, Nixon had appointed somebody named Dr. Maillet, John Maillet, to head up the conference. He gave us a spot a whole evening at that conference. Mr. Benedict and Mr. Panish sat. Number one, they walked with me to the platform. They took front row seats, and they had a good time. A wonderful time. They come back and they told them all how great I was, and they went upstairs. They said, "Well, we're going upstairs and watch television because they want to see themselves on television." I don't know if Mr. Panish is still living. He retired, but I don't know if Mr. Bannerman is still living or not because he was old up in age at that time. But no, they never bothered me. I remember once being interviewed by Bob Abernathy on NBC, and Mr. Murphy was watching it, and I said to Abernathy, he wanted to know about me working, and I told him I wasn't able to work unless you're going to pay me the caucus. I had done very well with my mouth, so I'd like to have a job that you paid me for talking. Ms. Murray wrote me a note and sent in the mail that he wished he had a position on his staff that he could hire me. And since he didn't, keep up the good work, so I never had any problems with that.
And did any of the other recipients who became more visible and active ever have problems in other places?
Yes, they did. A lot of them got bought off. A lot of them was given jobs to shut up their mouths. And some of them jobs didn't pay much more than welfare checks did. Some of them were threatened by the social workers and things. And some of them, though, were able to overcome it. They didn't pay any attention. They went on and done what they felt like they had to do. But some did get a lot of slack. We didn't get any from this state and from this county, and especially from this county.
Now, let's sort of go backward a little bit, and then I want to spend some time on what you wrote later, but I need to have that information for my students, but this is just to keep us going on track here all the way to the present. What did you feel about the organization first of that September 67 Poor People's March on Washington, and what was the connection with welfare rights?
67?
Before that was before the big campaign that Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy started.
Now, I remember the big march on Washington was 1963.
Yeah, well, that was a real big one.
We weren't involved in that.
But apparently,
the next one was the big thing was the Poor People's Campaign, 1968, which was started being organized before Martin Luther King was shot down.
Right.
Okay.
I remember, if you saw the book, you saw me, Abernathy King, and George, and some more ladies at the table. Okay, that was done in Chicago, February 1968. That was about 2 months before King was shot. And what had happened, we were having our conference there. And the King people came to us for support. And I remember saying, no, where's King himself? So they went on to tell me how busy he was and the blah, blah, blah. I said, no, well, if he's busy, and let me see, Lewis Sampson, Bernard Lafayette was the anchor man for that meeting. And I went that morning after breakfast to meet with them. And I told them, no, if King is not here before we leave, at the YMCA hotel, that's where we were, down Wabash Street. And about 2 o'clock that evening, Rev, Abernathy, Martin Luther King, Bernard Lee, Andy Young, all of them stepped off the elevator for the meeting. Now, how they got him up here that quick, I don't know. As you see that picture at the table, I had my oldest grandson on my lap. He's 25 years old now, so you know I don't miss him. And I remember somebody at the table, it looked like it was Margie Blake or Mamie Hall, said, Dr. King, when we were so and so, where were you? And they kicked his butt that day. So I sat there and let him kick it, though. Tell her I feel like they didn't need kicking no more, you know. So he, I don't know what I asked him, but something I asked him, and he said, to tell you the truth, I really don't know.
It was something about one of the welfare bills, I think.
I think it was. And he said, I really don't know. That did it. That was enough for me. He told the truth. He did not know, you know. And that's where the marriage between FCLC and Welfare Rights was formed. We decided that we would support them in whatever they